Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very accomplished and a senior professional who's achieved a lot in life, Soam Mittal. Soam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Pleasure to be here on this show. I see the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you. Soam is from IIT Kanpur and from IIM Ahmedabad. And he was the former chairman and president of NASSCOM. And of course, so many other roles he's played. So, Soam, tell me a little bit about your early life and some of the early companies you worked for.
So, you know, my father was in government service. So we kept, like all of us, kept moving every 3 years. The schools will change. I was in Faizabad and Bangalore and Calcutta, Rohtak, Jalandhar. So I think, you know, those days of moving every 3 years kind of brought in a lot of adaptability.
Right.
You know, being in this government, middle class kind of a family, you know, values and ethics and focus on education was quite large.
Correct.
So sometimes I wonder whether I went to IIT and IIM for my sake or for my father's sake, but, right. You know, because I think he would, like all of us, would please. Yeah. It was interesting. I had a chance to work across sectors. I started with engineering in L&T and then moved to Escorts, which was motorcycles. And then I joined Shriram Fibers, who were looking to diversify. And then I got this work. I worked 8 years with Denso, which actually was a big game changer for me because all my work ethos I really picked up from them. Mm-hmm. And somehow in 89, I landed up in Wipro in Bangalore. And, you know, people said, oh, what a good move for a sunrise industry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this. I'd never seen a computer after I left IIT Kanpur. Mm-hmm. And but I think that journey was a very good switch from Wipro to digital. And I think that went on. And I was really fortunate that at the end of my career, I decided not to do any more corporate work, but then went on to run NASSCOM, which was quite fulfilling because, you know, you could address a much larger industry level work. And this industry is very good. They work together.
Yeah.
So interestingly, a lot of influences came in. Family was one. The second was, you know, the influence that the Japanese had. And I really picked up my work ethos from them. Mm-hmm. Which was building trust, you know, sense of belonging to an organization, mm-hmm. getting into detail. So that remained with me, and I would really attribute it to, I think I had about a 12 to 13 year association.
Wow.
But it was interesting, after Japan, the next deal for me was US. So it was straddling two very, very different, shall we say, cultures in a sense,
yeah.
And thinking we were. You know how all of us Indians are, we're very adaptable and we could gain from both of them. So
absolutely.
Been a really nice journey for me.
Fantastic. So, you know, you worked with several engineering and technology companies. My question to you is that what was holding back Indian companies in the 80s and the 90s from becoming global players?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question because sometimes you look back your life and you said you worked so hard and what did you gain?
Correct.
Right? And, you know, it's very odd that we actually grew up in a very over-regulated environment.
Correct.
You know, and also a protected environment. So the only thing that you were doing is you were manufacturing because you were not allowed to import.
Mm.
And there were very high duties. So I think we built in inefficiencies in the whole system. We were not productive. Infrastructure was bad. So you were very happy with what you did. You were very happy producing 40,000 cars in a year and have a 10-year waiting list.
Correct.
So if you have that kind of an environment, I think you do have issues. And I would blame not the government alone. I think we as industrialists also were always looking for protection.
Hmm.
Right? I think it was only later when things started getting opened up, the IT got opened up in Rajiv Gandhi's time and then, yeah. You know, 1990, whatever happened. So it's changed. And it's very interesting today. You have the auto industry, which was so regulated, is booming. IT industry is booming. So I think it was that. And, you know, you really feel low for all the effort we put in. We were achieving so little.
Correct.
Maybe this is the time for us to Correct. To leverage what you said, you know, really become global.
I agree with you. And, you know, before I move to your stint in NASSCOM, you know, picking up from what you just spoke about working for a large Japanese company, and you said you learned a lot about the culture. Talk to me a little bit about what was so different in the culture in a Japanese company.
So, you know, AI had to build trust.
Mm.
Right? And I think trust is required everywhere, but there is this suspicion that happens. Mm. You know, I found that we are all smart guys, right? We know a whole lot. We know a lot of little things. Whereas when you deal with individuals in Japan, they would be single person that you deal with. And they would be very shy because... So then I realized that if we had to get work done, we had to build it, you know, build their trust. And I think that I realized was a very key in relationship. And it's not only true for Japanese, it's elsewhere. But I think they value it more. Correct. And then, you know, as we went through, it was about pride of work, right? I remember when we set up the factory, our workers refused to sweep the floor, saying, "Hamare ghar mein to mard jhadu nahi uthata hai." But we wanted to clean the floors by ourselves because then we won't dirty it. So for 3 or 4 months, the CEO, who was a Japanese, and I, who was the general manager, all of us used to sweep the floor. Wow. Till 3 months later, the workers came and said, "Kyon sharminda kar rahe hain?" And, you know, then they started doing it. So it, then I realized there was this pride of work that was there. The amount of detail they would get in. They would, you know, we all blame the Japanese for being very slow, and but they might be slow in the beginning, but then the execution, we took 2 years to plan, but 8 months to execute. Wow. Right? So I think these were the stuff, and, you know, I think the relationships I built then still continue. By the way, I'm still consulting with that organization I left 30 years back.
Amazing.
Right. So so it's interesting. And, you know, I went there recently to Japan, and people who used to work with me, and they all retired. They drove 2-3 hours to just come and meet. And, you know, it was a very emotional moment.
What about your relationships?
Yeah, but, you know, I think it takes two to make it. Right. And, you know, this was without agenda. You didn't have a, you were, you know, when you don't have an agenda, the trust gets built. And just, you know, if we had made a mistake, we just raise our hand and say, "Oh, look, we goofed up." I think that's what they... So I, through the life, I think these things stood well. And by the way, at no point were these any deterrent for anything that I did later on.
Very good. So what you're telling me is that there is no concept of what I don't like as a word, jugaad, in Japan.
No. In fact, I don't like the word jugaad. Yeah. I kind of made it into, you know, the stuff where, so I think we need a jugaad as a quick fix to let things happen, but that's not the permanent one. And I think we've started believing that jugaad will do. By the way, I realized that quality doesn't cost, right? Because you're using the same material, same machinery. It's the pride in work of the worker who says, "Look, I enjoy what I make." And I remember when we had any issue with the quality, the first person that we went to was not the quality department, but to the shop floor to show to the guy who passed it, saying it failed. Amazing. Right. So I think that is very important. So that sense of belonging and ownership was very strong.
Very nice. So, you know, so moving to your next avatar as the head of NASSCOM, you know, you very rightly said that technology, and, you know, is what probably opened up this economy more than anything else. And a businessman realized that their business can be done without protection. You know, IT drove the economy from literally the turn of the century when Y2 came in. What do you foresee for the future?
So, you know, the technology is rapidly evolving. I can't, not, you know, a lot of things have happened together, so we keep talking digital right now, but technology has always been adopting. Earlier, we used to see the face of technology, but now, technology is going to be invisible to us. Everything, every industry. So it's no longer called IT, right? Technology is now embedded into every function today.
Absolutely right.
Right? I think the connectivity improved, the cost of IT, storage, data, all became very low. Of course, it's expensive because there's so much data. Yes. So I would think that we would stop using this word of what will happen to technology. It's going to be there. We are going to be, you know, everyone is a native user. We're doing this call today, right? There is enormous amount of technology. When we do a swipe on the iPhone, the amount of technology that goes in. So I think technology would be there. It will be even more pervasive. And good news is that I think COVID has really, really accelerated it.
Correct.
In areas that we never thought it would reach. I would believe that many of our problems of healthcare, education, right, which we have been talking a lot recently, the Prime Minister announced this National Health Digital Mission, right? So hopefully we will implement it. Aadhaar is actually a technology platform.
Right.
So some of these countries' problems which we cannot address in physical manner, technology will do it. So India would be the largest gainer.
Hmm. Very true. So, you know, moving on, I mean, there is a lot of discussion about China and how China powered its economy first with manufacture, and then on that, on top of that, it built some amazing technologies in various fields. What should India be doing differently to be able to compete?
You know, it's really, I've often been asked that we meet all of Indians, they're all smart guys. Mm-hmm. Why do you have what you have, right? So, you know, I say it with all humility. I think just because of our education system and what we are and our genes, right? We have no dearth of talent.
Correct.
Right? So, you know, our issues are, there is a huge amount of mistrust in the society, in the government and the industry, and that mistrust just imposes regulation after regulation, which binds us.
Right.
So yes, every economy, they would be having some people who would be misusing, right? It'll be frauds and scams, but you don't come up with a regulatory environment which is so overbearing. So today, if you look at it, whether it's a small company or a large company, the regulatory framework is the same.
Correct.
Now, as an entrepreneur, you know, I was very happy when I was deciding about my product, but as soon as I formed my company, you know, my 60% of my time goes away in regulatory compliance. So I think compliance is required, but the government should trust industry more. Right? We as industry should also build that trust.
Correct.
Right? And of course, I'm not undermining the need for infrastructure, and I think that will all come. It is improving. But this is a time, I do feel that while we are focuses on getting our ease of doing business, moving up in terms of the ranking, but on the ground level, I think there is still a lot more to do.
Okay.
Right? And I think this COVID has proven that industry is responsible. We did not sack people. Mm. We gave them salaries.
Yeah.
So it's not that we are here to exploit labor. That's a very old thought. Mm. I just hope we will be doing disservice to our future generations if this opportunity we don't take.
Mm. Very interesting. So let me move on. You know, Soam, you serve on several boards. I used to serve on many. I've started stepping off from most. Yeah. And the primary reason is the fiduciary responsibility of non-executive board members is very stringent. So my question to you is, what would your advice be to people listening to you and me talk on what kind of boards to join, or rather, what should they watch out for before they join a board?
I think this is a very good question. So there are two parties involved.
Hmm.
The company that wants you as a board member, and you who also want to join that company as a board member. I think both of us should ask ourselves, why do I want this person? And you have to ask yourself, why this company?
Correct.
And Ashutosh, if you are worthy of becoming a board member, then you can also judge.
Hmm.
Right? There is enough information available, there is also a judge. So I would only join a company, not because I'm lending my name,
hmm,
right? But you have an honest discussion. Do you think you would be open? Would you be open to suggestions, ideas? And, you know, while I think the fiduciary responsibility is high, but at the same time, if we are doing an honest day's job and, you know, we are speaking our mind, mm-hmm, right? There may be some consequences sometimes. But I think we also, based on our experience, need to contribute to other companies working.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do believe that sometimes fiduciary responsibility, I was on a bank's board and now they made it even higher. Every time there is a fraud that happens, RBI puts in more conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And to a point that they are asking the independent directors to run the bank.
Hmm.
Right? And obviously they won't find enough people to do this.
Correct.
When there's a problem, instead of getting into details, the first thing they do is go get the director.
Hmm.
Right. But on the other hand, I think I've been very fortunate. The boards I've been, they welcome you. They take your opinions. Criticism is welcome. And I enjoy them. And I think one has been very careful on the boards one chose. If they were looking for just a name, I don't want it.
Correct.
And you're not doing it for money at this point in time in life, or not just for a, you know, right, thing I've got long term. So I think we can manage within this environment, but I hope the government realizes that there are not too many people going around to do this. You know, giving me a test to check whether I'm competent to be a director, you know, who wants to do that?
So before I move to a few questions on startups and entrepreneurship, when I was reading about you, I found that you were on the advisory council that developed the IT vision for Indian Railways. Was that implemented, and is the railways what it is because of that?
No, you know, it's a sad story as well. Mm-hmm. You know, railways was the first to adopt technology.
Correct.
Right? The passenger railway reservation system was far ahead of its time, came in the 60s or, you know, late 60s or early 70s. Mm-hmm. Then it was followed by the freight operating system, and then we have IRCTC. So railways has done some amazing stuff, but this is the consumer facing side.
Right.
However, to improve the efficiency of the railways, technology has to be leveraged. Mm-hmm. And it's a very large organization. They have some amazing people. It's really amazing that this is the only operating entity of the government, and it runs, right? Trains run, they move people. But I think we have a capacity issue, we have resource. So the minister then requested me to come. We had 15 people, we worked hard. We had 22 companies that came and made presentations. We had international people coming in to make presentations, all free.
Mm.
And that was the reason, you know, we got a fairly good workable report, but that required changes to implement. You know, IT is one, technology is available, but you need. So we did come out, but I think there was a lot of resistance within, because it meant structural changes inside. Where did IT report? What do we do? Right, etc. So I think they did make some changes there, but I think there is much more that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we look at what's happening with passengers, like, you know, internet connectivity, etc. I think IRCTC, they are great, great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we need is how to use our tracks better, how to use our rolling stock better, mm-hmm. how to ensure safety is better. We can't change signaling, but there is enough technology available to prevent accidents.
Correct.
And it is too slow because it's so large.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, one or two changes happened after that. The vertical services that were in railways, they have been abolished.
Mm-hmm.
So people can move across. So the silos are getting broken.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll get there. To move the big elephant always takes time, but we'll get there. I enjoyed it. But I must conclude this by saying I met some very, very amazing people in railways. And I think this railway runs based on those amazing people.
Yeah,
that
I agree with you. I agree. So a few questions for you on startups, because, you know, you looked at a lot of startups. I'm sure you've invested in some. Before I move to a few personal questions. In our economy, everyone is now supporting startups. My question to you is, based on your experience, what are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
Yeah. So, you know, India has always been one of self-employed. We never called them startup before. I started my business, but that business was not called a startup. I think this word came up really because technology kind of startups, it was outside money rather than my own money, right? And that kind of thing happened.
Mm.
So we have, the good part is that a lot of very bright people, right, who were only doing professions. I could never have thought of doing a startup,
yeah,
right, that I wanted to do a job. So you asked me about mistakes. I think they over-focus on the technology.
Mm.
The technology is the enabler, but at the end of it, the user doesn't care what's behind it.
Correct.
And I think where they lose touch is really on the ground, right, where it touches the consumer. Right. So, you know, today I also use some products and services of startups,
mm-hmm.
but I can't find a way to ever reach anyone responsible if I have a suggestion or a complaint.
Okay.
You run a very large chain of pharmacies. I started using one of these pharmacies as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the shipments were poor. They were broken up into seven shipments for one order. Right. Now, that's not a great experience. I can understand they have issues. But you have to be customer-oriented.
Correct.
The other mistake, I think, is do a good job, build a great company, hire the best people, right? But don't necessarily get pushed by either investors or VCs or angels to be playing all the time a valuation game.
Hmm.
Value gets built. Infosys value got built much later.
Yeah.
TCS value got much. They built a great organization. Amazon built a great organization. Now it's valued. But this, you know, this thrust that I guess we are responsible as investors as well to be looking for quick returns, which actually changes the perspective.
Mm. Interesting. So let me move to a few personal questions. I have a few minutes left now. You know, over your life, you know, which has been across multiple companies, Are there any people who've had a strong influence on your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. There are lots of people who influence you, and you know, some of us are fortunate to have worked with amazing people.
Yes.
But when I look back, I don't think I'm going to name one, right? I had a school teacher, Ganeshi Lalji, he's no more, right? He just had faith in me. He helped me, you know, get my self-worth. I you know, didn't have that, but he encouraged me.
Yeah.
That stayed with me. Then in college, I had Pulin Garg. He actually helped me understand how to relate with people. And that's, I would say, a big plus for me, where, you know, relating with people and how expectations are not important.
Right.
Then I think, as I mentioned to you, working the Japanese as a group really influenced me, right? And they continue to,
yeah.
I go to Japan, I see anything they can improve further, right? And there's no end to improvement.
Mm.
And then more recently, when I joined Wipro and Mr. Premji, I decided not to join them, but, you know, my final interview was with him. He interviewed me for 6.5 hours, one-on-one. And I joined him because I said, if the person is spending so much time, and then I think he was one person who, he lived the life he said he would. And, you know, what he said is what he did. And I think that, again, was a big influence. So there are a lot of people who influence, but then if you had to, then I think made a big role in my life.
And then, you know, an interesting segue from that question is, what are the three words that would describe Som Mittal?
I don't know. It's a tough one. I would look at it from what people tell me, right? So I think I would be trustworthy and dependable, right? So that's for me, whether you call it ethical and all that, it's part of it. I think second, I really relate with people, right? For me, and that's been my mantra all through my life, I think for me, that's the biggest concern. And even today, I would put that as a very, very high on my priority. And then if you know, today we are at a point that you want to share, right? And I think the platform that you're offering me here is another one which says, so I'm in a selfless, I'm very contented, right? So life has been good, and I think it's been pretty contented.
And that's a lot to say, you know, as you look back at life, isn't it? So wonderful. So my next question to you is that, you know, given all the people that you worked with, and, you know, you've made friends all over the place, you still consult with the Japanese. If you were a role model to millions of children who decided to adopt your life lessons, what would be the one thing you would change in yourself?
You know, Ashutosh, particularly COVID time, you get a lot of time to reflect. And not that my life hasn't had its own issues, challenges. Some of them really gut-wrenching. But then I look back and I truly don't want to change anything. Right? You know, I think every experience, whether negative or positive, has helped me become what I am.
Correct.
And, you know, I would say that you have no control on what will happen from outside. External factors that come in, illness that comes in, you have no control. You do best that you can.
Yeah.
But I think dealing with them is what teaches you, right? And I would say, you know, I'll tell the children, I think do an honest job, do your best, give it your best. I think things will be taken care of. And that's happened to me. I never had to ask for anything. I think it came very, very naturally to me. I would also tell them to not over-engineer their life and career. Sometimes I hear people saying, I'll do engineering, then I'll do this, I'll work for MBA, then I'll do finance. And, you know, that's not the way. I'm a metallurgist.
Yeah.
And I worked in a software industry for a long time. You know, where is the connection? But it didn't come in because it designed life. It's not, you cannot design your life.
Correct. Well said. So, Som, thank you very much. It's been such an honor and pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much.
Wish you lots of success in everything you do.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.